Everyone this morning. I'm so glad that you could be here today. And I want to share some things about the resurrection with us this morning that I think are quite profound. I mean, obviously, that's what I would think. But I want to share that with you anyway. So a couple of weeks back, I got an email in my inbox, and it said, "You have been tagged on a Facebook photo." And I'm thinking, oh boy, all right, here we go. So I go and find it. And I look at the photo, and on the one hand I say, well, fortunately, that's really not me. But on the other hand, you know, that's not me, and that's going to look bad. I had two opposite, almost, reactions right away. And maybe you've had the same thing. If you have a Facebook account, maybe you get a message every so often, you have been tagged in this or that. And you get those feelings that come up, like, whoa, everybody's going to see this. And then on the other hand, you're thinking, yeah, everyone's going to see this. This is great. So what happens is you have a little bit of stepping back, thinking, well, I hope no one sees all the bad stuff about me or that I look okay. And then on the other hand, you're thinking, well, your little fame never hurt anybody. At least 15 minutes of it, as Andy Warhol used to say, would be great. That's new for me. It's probably new for a lot of you who experience the same thing as well. There's very few occasions prior to a few years ago where I'd have that set of reactions to a message that came to me. But that's what our culture has moved to, particularly with the way that social media has gone. And if you have a Facebook account, you get an awful lot of that. And if it's not about you, it's about somebody else. Where right away, there is the feeling of you're either included or you're not included. And there's a desire, if you feel like you're not included, to have some kind of fame. And by fame, what I mean is that you are seen by some loose conglomeration of anonymous people for a little bit of time. And that almost takes care of the feeling, well, I've been left out. Now, that is a very specific kind of shift in our culture where a lot of people will experience a different kind of way of feeling included. You know, am I being honored or not being honored? Becomes a deeper question that's more important and happens more often. Now, a lot of people who are my parents' age and people who are like them, they can be a lot younger than that, but they can be like them, will ask themselves when they're thinking of joining a group, what are the rules here? Like, what's the right thing to do? If I want to be part of this group, what do they expect me to do to get in? You know, what time do things happen? What are you supposed to wear when you get in there? How are you supposed to be? Where are you supposed to sit? Anybody recognize this? that's the way that is. Now, my particular generation and those who are like me, whatever age you are, you have a different set of questions when you're thinking about joining a group. And you see this a lot in a church, particularly as us boomers. Well, never mind. You know, we take over. The boomer age is kind of the glut of church membership. And the main question that we think about going into a group is this. What does this church or this group believe? What do they think is true? And do I agree with that? If I don't agree with what they believe or what they think is true, I'm going somewhere else to where I actually do believe what they believe. And if I don't like what this church thinks, there's another church or some other group or some other kind of organization that may not be a church, but they believe what I believe. And that's where I'm going to go. Now, you don't have to raise your hand if you recognize yourself in this, but that's the way we are. We are absolutely that way. And we choose on that basis. Now, if you're my children's age, or somebody like them, no matter what age you are, there's a different question you ask yourself about joining a group. And the question is this: can I be a part of this group without being judged? Can I belong no matter who I am, what I've done, where I've been, what my name is, who my family is, where I was raised? Can I just belong? Will you accept me? That goes back to that Facebook example that I pointed out to you, where our culture has become a lot more honor, some would say honor shame, than any time previously. Can you just belong? Now, in the resurrection of Jesus, there is a very powerful, rich answer to that question. So I thought we'd unpack that for a few minutes. And this incident today of Mary Magdalene at the tomb, very, very instructive, very insightful. Mary Magdalene, as you know, was reported to be engaged in prostitution and be possessed by at least 7 demons, according to tradition, and so forth and so on. And here she is, the first witness to the resurrection. And the first one Jesus sends in witness to the resurrection, making her, by definition, the first apostle. Apostle is the one who is sent. That's what that word means. So we have all that, and we have this woman who in this culture, which is much more deeply honor and shame than anything we see here, she is received by Jesus and given one of the highest offices you could possibly get with Jesus and sent to do what he desires first. And the way that happens is very, very incredible, if you ask me. And it's this. Here's Mary. She's at the tomb. She's weeping. She's thinking, oh, no, the stone is rolled away. And she's not thinking, oh, right, he's risen from the dead. She's thinking, uh-oh. Looks in, doesn't see the body. And she immediately thinks, somebody stole the body. And she runs to Peter and John and says, somebody stole the body. They run back. John, it says he believes, but he didn't understand what was going on. Peter, it doesn't say. He was probably thinking, yep, they stole the body. And he goes back home. All that's going along. And Mary stays right there after Peter and John go back. And she's weeping and just beside herself. And then there's somebody right there, as we just read. She thinks it's the gardener. Why the gardener was working on Sunday, I don't know. Well, Sabbath was Saturday, so it's probably fine. And there she starts talking and she says, well, the Bible phrase, they've taken my Lord and I don't know where they put him. Another translation would be, somebody stole the body. Which was one of the arguments that the enemies of Christianity put up. They said, no, he didn't rise from the dead. Somebody stole the body. They go back and forth a little bit. Jesus starts asking questions. Have you ever noticed that about Jesus? Starts asking you questions. You know he knows the answer. You know it. He's asking it because he wants to get something from you. So he says, Mary, but who are you looking for? Goes right into the center of her heart because she's looking for him. And then immediately, she doesn't even answer by name who she's looking for. And he says to her, Mary. And in fact, what the Greek and the original language suggests is he called her Miriam, which was her given name at birth. It was the name which would have been the most expressive of who she actually is. And it would have resonated deeply and powerfully as soon as he said, Miriam. And her eyes would have been open. She would have seen it right away, who he was, and just answers by calling him by name, Rabboni, which is a kind of a deeply respectful title for a teacher. And right there, he sends her, just almost like ordains her, the first apostle, and sends her. Going back to Peter and John and the others. He sends her back, he sends her back to her extended family, the group that's going to start having this message and this power of the resurrection just cascade through the Roman Empire. It's going to start from that household. Many households will be multiplied out of that all throughout Rome and Greece and Asia, all over the place. Now what that means for us is this. Many of us, no matter what our age is or how we think we're going to join groups, we'll be thinking the way that you begin relating to Jesus is by guilt and innocence. And we've kind of been told by our church experience, well, you know, obviously you have done something wrong, but lucky for you, Jesus came along and he took care of that, and you're going to be all right. But you just have to remember, you did something wrong. Anybody not hear that in church somewhere? This is what hits us all the time. And what Jesus is saying, I mean, there is that. There is that aspect of our sinfulness. And what Jesus is saying, it's not just that you are lucky that I came along and took care of this. Jesus is saying, I am restoring you into everything I desired for you. You can belong here without any judgment. Can I hear another one? It's great. That's a huge part of what he's saying. You belong to me. And what I've done is come and restored your honor. Restored everything you were created to be. It's not that I'm just making a list, checking it twice, making sure you're not on it. That's not what I'm doing. I'm drawing you to myself. I'm restoring you to my family. Now that will begin to cut deeper and deeper and deeper into our lives, into the way that we live our lives. And it says certain things to certain people. For example, if you are the kind of person, and I'm being very careful not to look at anybody, maybe, well, I don't know. If you're the kind of person who feels you're doing everything for everybody and you can never let them see you sweat, and you're doing it all by yourself, Jesus says this: you will never walk alone again. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Now, there are people who don't do that. They don't do everything for everybody else. They don't care about it. Just won't do that. But they will go along thinking, I can never let anyone know that I'm struggling or that I feel weak or that I can't quite do this or I don't know how to move ahead or I need to look at the instructions. I can't show myself to be weak. it's almost a shaming thing for some to appear to be weak. And to that, Jesus says this: where you are weak, I am strong. And he will fill you to overflowing with the power of the Spirit. And then there are some who feel, well, okay, I'm good with all that, and that's great, but where I lose confidence is this: I just don't live up to the Christian standard. I'm kind of afraid that people may see that I've sinned, or I haven't got it right, or I've lost my temper, or I couldn't remember what to say when my neighbor asked me something about the faith or my church or whatever, or some members of my family or the friends that I stay with. They don't appear to be Christians, and I'm with them, and I don't want anybody to know about that. I kind of feel stuck. I don't know what to do about my faith, how to say anything about it or whatever. You kind of tied in knots, to which Jesus says, I want you in my family and in my household, and I want you to live there. I want you to be with me no matter what. That's what comes from the resurrection of Jesus. That's what happens on the cross, among many, many, many other things. But he restores that to us, our honor, our dignity, where we can stand without judgment before him and before each other, where we are free when we do sin and we do offend one another to ask for forgiveness, because the honor has already been restored. And we can stand on that confidence and grow in our relationships in that manner. Now, Jesus may be saying something to you this morning about that. He may be writing something on your heart, tapping you on the shoulder in some way, putting some thoughts in your mind about what it is to be in his family. And what I'm hoping that we can see together today is that being in Jesus' house and in his family flows directly from the center of the Christian faith, which is his resurrection. And he made that way when he conquered death. And there may be something he's asking you specifically to consider this morning about that. There may be some way you have felt you have to do it all, not let them see you sweat, or you can't show that you're weak, or you're not confident about what you believe. And Jesus is saying something to you about that very specifically. If you would just take that up, give him a moment to let that echo within you. Take the step that he's prompting you to take because of that, whatever it may be. It's very, very likely not going to be a legalistic step, but a step of relationship and acceptance and inclusion. If you would do that, you will take a step further into his house. Would you please stand? Lord Jesus, we thank you and we praise you that you have conquered those things that keep us apart, disconnected, dishonored, and separated. And we ask now, today, this morning, for the honor of your name, that we would have your power, your grace, and your ability to enter more closely and deeply into your family. Amen.